Hoaherema Yorana. You're listening to Tereva Neyau, the only podcast currently documenting the voices and lives of Tahitian American families and couples, the long distance, the love stories, our lives between Tahiti and the United States of America. We present to you Tereva Neyau. Yorana, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to our first episode of season two. We've got a lot of great episodes and guests lined up for this season, and I'm so excited to begin with my good friend and sister, Moinau Rivera. My wife, Vairea, and I met Moinau and her husband, Steve, back in 2017, just 3 months after we moved to the U.S. from Tahiti. Moinau was born and raised in Tahiti and came to the USA in 2006. She is the co-owner of Porinete Adventures, one of the only Ma'ohi-owned travel agencies in California, and one that has helped thousands of travelers make their way to French Polynesia and other destinations in the Pacific. She also co-founded Polylingual, the first English language learning platform for students to learn Reo Tahiti, or Tahitian language, online. Other than her amazing cultural work and contributions, both in French Polynesia or Ma'ohi Nui and in the U.S., she has helped out Tahitian American Families Group so much in growing, and she was the last one to host our largest Tamara'a meet and greet to date. It is such an honor to have her open season two. I hope you guys enjoy this episode.
All right. Thank you so much, Ryan, for having me. I'm so excited to be on this podcast. It's an honor for me to be here as a guest. So maruru mete from the bottom of my heart for including me here. Without wasting time, my name is Moinau Rivera, and Rivera is actually my spouse's name. I was born and raised in Tahiti, and I grew up in the cities of Mahina and Papeno. I was back and forth in both cities, and my family is from Reatea. My mom is from Reatea. They were born and raised there. My grandma, who lives in the family house, is currently living in the city of Uturoa, which is the capital city of Reatea. I come from a huge family, but I'm not close with everybody in my family. My great-grandma had seven children, and of course, my grandma had five kids. My mom has like five siblings, and she's the only one. My mom is the only one who didn't have many children. There's only me and my brother. So we're like the smallest household, but everybody, I have like plenty of cousins. My mom and my brother, they still live in Tahiti, so I'm the only one living abroad. I'm a mother of two daughters, Nanihi and Mohiti, two teenagers, 12 and 14 years old. And I have been married for almost 18 years now with Steve Rivera, who is American, who grew up here in Southern California. So I moved here in the U.S. in 2006 for many, many reasons. While I may not have time to share all of them, here on the podcast, but one of the main reason was my desire to discover the world and see something different. Because, you know what, the idea of like living in LA, Los Angeles, to me, LA is like the open door to the world. It's just easy, you know, to travel everywhere. So actually, it really got me excited. You know, I thought to myself, man, I really want to go and live there so I can travel, you know, all over the world. Tahiti is so small, and you see the same things all the time, the same people, same routine. And to me, I'm kind of like an adventurer, so I wanted to explore more. So that was one of the biggest reasons why I moved here. But I have to say that it was really hard to leave. Oh my goodness, I didn't think it would be like truly painful. It took me actually, frankly, a couple years to feel comfortable here in the U.S. I was really homesick. I was even depressed at some point, questioned so many things for quite some time. You know what? At that time, I could, you know, make the decision to go back to Tahiti. But I don't know, for some reason, something was holding me here in the U.S. I couldn't make the decision just like that on my own. I was married. So, of course, there's a lot of things that I had to go over with Steve, and I couldn't make such a decision like without reflection. you know. So, but I don't know, for some reason, here I am. I'm still here. You know, I'm still living here. And I will tell a little bit later, because now I know why I'm here. At that time, I didn't, you know. So what we decided back then, since the first year I moved here in 2006, Steve and I, we said, okay, we will make the commitment to go back to Tahiti every year. That's our goal. Every year we'll go back. At least that's something, you know, I'll go back home. Be with my family and friends. And then, you know, so which we did, actually, we maintained that commitment, except the years I was pregnant. So I think we were able to kind of find the balance, you know, between the two homes, I'll say, my home here and my home in Tahiti. Now, talking about my childhood, oh my gosh, I had a great childhood. I attended a private school my entire life in Papeete City. And then I went to a public high school. Every holiday, every vacation, my mom will send me to me and my brother to Reatea Island. This is why Reatea feels like my second home, because like we were basically in Tahiti only for school. That's pretty much what it was. And going to Reatea is like the island. You know, it's not as developed as Tahiti. When my time over there, it wasn't really a vacation. For us, we stayed at my grandma's, of course, and we work in the fapu. So the fapu, for the ones who don't understand the word, is the planting field, basically. And my grandpa, my grandma owned a huge piece of land where we grew taro, all kinds of vegetables, and vanilla. Vanilla was our biggest thing, yeah. And oh my gosh, this was a nightmare. Every time we go back to Reatea, we're like, oh goodness, we're gonna spend like hours under the sun and take out all the weeds. I mean, I really learned what it was to live the island life. And it's funny, it was not pleasant at that time when we were kids, but now that I'm an adult, I am so thankful and so blessed that I had to experience that. And I give thanks to my mom and my grandma, my grandpa, for, you know, teaching all these things, you know. Growing the vanilla was my favorite part. It's a very tricky work because, you know, in Tahiti, we don't have insects that actually, I'm not sure if you say that in English, like when you transfer pollen to another flower, I don't know how you call that, pollinating maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm making up this word. Or maybe it's the right word.
No, that's the right word. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That was good. And so in Tahiti, you have to do this manually. And us as kids, because we have like small hands and we will take like toothpicks, and we call, in French, we call this process marier la vanille, is when you take out the pollen and put in a like different side or different part of the flower. And we will do this like for hours and hours. And that's how I knew like how to kind of like obtain a vanilla pod, you know? So, man, there's so many like great memories. And after, when the work is done, our reward was to, my grandma will take us to the motu, a small isle or island across Reatea, where we will go fish and play and bathe in the water. And that was my time to snorkel. I love snorkeling. And it was just the best. And we will eat like fresh fish that we will grill on site, you know, like whatever. We'll make up a barbecue plate just like that with whatever we can find and add some uru, some breadfruit, and many other things. And then during July in Reatea, they did also have their Heiva festivities. So we'll go watch the Oriteti, the Himine Tumu, and then after we'll go to the Papio, which is the fairgrounds, and where we'll, you know, just play games and eat some cotton candy. I mean, just like simple. It was so simple back then. I feel old by saying this because back then we didn't have what we have now in Tahiti, actually, or what we have now in Reatea. It's so much modern now. They have like fancy rides. Back in the day, it wasn't that, so far away from that. So I was very, very fortunate to experience the real island life. And this is, it was all in the Reatea, not Tahiti, because Tahiti is definitely more modern. Another thing I can talk about my childhood is I grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. In my family, we are Catholic, Protestant, and Seventh-day Adventist. We're kind of mixed. I think this was one of the reasons why our family was kind of divided. Like I said earlier, I wasn't close to everybody in my family. We're not really a united family, sadly. I think it's because religion was kind of like making, it built walls between each other. So I grew up on the Seventh-day Adventist church side. I actually sang. I was part of the choir. I sang for many, many years. And I was even part of a band. Actually, we travel all over the islands of Tahiti. We did the Raromate Islands, Raiatea, Huahine, Taha, Bora Bora, Maupiti. We did the Tuamotu Islands. We went to Rangiroa, Tikehau, Takapoto. We went to Rurutu Island also. Oh my gosh, like I discovered so much about the islands of Polynesia in whole because of that, that singing group that I was part of. And so singing was always part of my life. I started singing for the first time in a huge crowd. I think it was a government event, and I was only 4 years old. I was almost crying because I was terrified of, the mass, the audience in front of me. But I did it. And since then, I knew that singing was kind of like my thing, right? My talent. I stopped singing kind of like about 5 years ago, maybe a little bit before the pandemic for health reasons. But I'm hoping to go back and sing again because singing is really, especially singing Tahitian people. I know it sounds cheesy, but I love our songs. I love it. There's so much soul. I always take joy to sing our songs, whether they are Himene Tumu or even modern Tahitian songs. I can sing anything. It just brightens my heart, So I'm hoping to get back on it, and I do my best here at home to share that with my girls, because this is something that is very unique to us, to us Maui people. I did also a lot of writings. I wrote a lot of songs, believe it or not, but I never actually share. I never share with people. I share with Steve maybe, but I don't know, maybe one day I'll have the opportunity to, put all these songs out there and find the right person to sing them. I don't know, but this is how much I was, so passionate about singing and everything. I really love my childhood, my life in Tahiti. When I moved here, I met a lot of people, immigrants, of course, and they all have the same story. They tell me, oh, we came here because we were looking to have a better life. We want to find the American dream. This was not the story for me. I had my Tahitian dream already, like I was living in paradise. I had a great job. I was working for Air Te Tīnui when I met Steve. All my family, my friends, everything was just great. So that was not, I didn't move to find something better. I already had better. But you know what? Because I'm an adventurer, I wanted to see something else. Really, that was really the reason why I moved. So yeah, that's kind of like a summary of my childhood and how I moved here in the United States.
So I had a question for you about family, if you don't mind sharing, just
Sure.
because a lot of us who, a lot of the folks who do tune into the podcast, and also in the Tahitian American Families group that we have, a lot of genealogy talk, right? What are your mother's parents' last names? What families do you come from?
Okay, so actually, I'll start with my father. I cannot call him dad because I did not grow up with him. So my father is actually French, 100%. These explain the blue eyes and the
Right.
light skin.
Yeah.
Funny part, funny thing about this is that I'm the only white, in parentheses, white person in my family. If you see my family, you see like I don't look like anybody. Like everybody is like dark,
Right.
big legs, big bone. Like, I have no like this. I'm not sure if Steve mentioned that, but when he met my family, he was like, that's your family, starting with my mom too, right? And I say, yeah. So I do look physically a lot more like my dad or my father, I should say. So my father's French. He and my mom separated when I was like very little. I think I was like 3 years old,
Okay.
for as much as I can't remember. And so I actually don't carry his name. I carry my mom's name. My maiden name is Viro,
Right.
and genealogy in Tahiti is so complex. It takes, I know some people have been searching for years, to figure out their lineage. And so I'm still working on it, can you believe? And funny thing is, my mom's generation, they didn't really care, but our generation is more aware of that and concerned about it.
Right.
So it's
Absolutely.
funny.
So you mentioned singing in your household, and then I personally know what kinds of things, some of the things that the girls are involved with, but in what ways are you preserving Mauhi culture in your own household currently?
My way of preserving and practicing my culture starts at home, actually starts in my household. To me, it begins by the things we do, the discussions we have as a family, the activities we engage in, our family. It's actually very simple. It's not a big thing, not as big as people think it might be. So preserving our Maui culture is with the things we do at home first. It starts there. I am a parent, and the day I became a mother, I felt that huge responsibility to transmit everything about my culture to my kid. It was so important. Till this day, I take this responsibility very seriously. It starts with language, it starts with cooking, it starts with dancing. I even push my kids to get involved in performing, like Ori Teiti, singing, drumming, whatever it is, on purpose. And I told them, I didn't want to force them. I didn't want to be a parent that forces their kids to, oh, you go and do this show, do this, that. I've seen that too when I moved here in the US. I didn't want to be that parent. But what I wanted my kids to understand is that the Maui culture is part of their identity. They have to figure out in which area they want to fit. Like for me, I am totally not a dancer. I have no skills into it. And I understand that. I tell people, not everybody's a dancer in Tahiti. Not everybody's a singer. Not everybody's a musician. Not everybody's a fisherman. Not everybody's a carver or a tattoo. Everybody has their own skill. So you got to practice your culture with whatever skills you have. And so I told my kids, you choose. You figure out if it's through cooking, then go ahead and go full on. But you need to know something about your culture. You need to find that connection. So now kids are growing. So of course we give them different ways to practice the culture. We expose them to it. Like for example, I taught my kids how to cook the taro, for example, or make uru fries. We love to eat that. I tell my family stories about my childhood in Tahiti, and then of course there's the language. All these little things to me are important, and that's actually the biggest way for me to preserve my culture. So yeah, it starts at home, right? I have teenagers right now, so I don't have their full attention right now, to be frankly here. But I strongly believe that one day they will remember all this, and maybe there will be a time they will ask for more. So a second thing that I actually do consistently to preserve is, this one is a big one. It's just not just my kids, but I'm mostly talking about my kids, right? To remind them who they are. And I'm talking about their identity as a Mauhi person. Obviously, they know very well that they are Tahitian American. They identify themselves as Tahitian American. But what I want them to really, really understand is the Tahitian part, because it's so hard to understand that part when you're not living in Tahiti. We live so far away from home, from my home. So of course it's hard for them. In their head, it's like, no, I'm American. I live here, right? I know a lot more about the American culture than the Tahitian culture. So my job is to make sure to remind them that, no, actually you have Mauhi blood running through your veins. So you have to embrace that, and you have to understand that they have a huge long line of family behind them. We have ancestors. They belong to a Tahitian family originally from Reate Island, from Opoa City, where my great grandma comes from. So I make sure to remind them that they were Tahitian American all the time. Myself, I'm Afa. I'm half and half. For the ones who don't know what Afa is, it's like when you belong, you have multiple ethnicities, right? I know that there's a lot of people who are like me that have insecurities about their identity. I'm sorry. I want to put the responsibility of the, on their parents, because maybe their parents didn't clarify or make sure that their children understood clearly who they are and where they come from. So the child grows up like that without, you know, really understanding who he is or who she is, right? I don't want that to happen to my kids. So that's my way of preserving the culture. I want to make sure they understand, like, here in their head, in their soul, in their that they are Tahitian American. They have to embrace that part of the culture. There was a point my kids felt when they started dancing and, you know, playing drums and music. At some point, they were very, like, intimidated because they were surrounded by people who practiced the oriteti or Tahitian drumming for years, you know, and they were excellent. They were amazing. They sing, like, awesome, right? They even sound like Tahitians, right? They felt like, oh, they weren't Tahitian enough. And it's, like, I'm going back, like, a couple years ago. They were very small at that time. They told me, like, one day, out of nowhere, like, oh, I don't feel like I'm Tahitian. Oh, man, it pissed me off so bad. Like, there's something just burning inside of me, right? And from that moment, I started making a huge deal about it. And I told them, you know what? I took them to the studio we were attending at that time. And I said, look at all these people there. Look, I told them. You know that girl who's dancing like the best for Arapu right there, front row? You know that guy who's drumming right there? He's drumming like a star. You know that oriteti teacher right there who's teaching them how to dance? Well, guess what? They're not Tahitian. You are. Remember what I'm saying, okay? These guys, they're amazing, right? But they're not Tahitian. You are, okay? And you're the only one who's in this room who has the Mauhi blood. I want you to remember this, and I want you to be proud of that, and I want you to embrace this. Since that day, of course, now we tease each other, and I always say, who is the Tahitian? And then they always respond to me, say, me. And I say, yes, that's right. And that's what I want to hear. These amazing people, they're practicing our culture. What they have is a passion, you know, a passion of sports, of culture, whatever it is, that's what they're doing. But it doesn't make them Tahitian. I'm sorry. It doesn't. You are. Okay, what I had taught them at that time is that they were confused with the excellence, you know, of their craft, you know, compared to their identity. And I say, no, those are two different things. You have Mauhi blood running through your veins. You got to be proud. If you want to be excellent at practicing oriteti or drumming, you have to work hard for it, yes, and practice. But if you want to practice oriteti and drumming to celebrate your culture, you also need to have to work hard. You got to immerse yourself. You got to understand the language. You got to, you know all about this. Whatever you do, whatever you decide to do with the way you practice your culture, you cannot dismiss your identity. It's a totally different thing. And so that is one of the big things that I fight every day to make sure that my kids understand that. And that's my way of preserving too. It's to give them enough confidence in themselves with their own identity. That's my way. Of course, there's a lot of other ways, but those are kind of like the main things that I want to make sure, because there's just so many people who are confused. And don't get me wrong, even in Tahiti, sadly, people in Tahiti who lives in Tahiti, born and raised, even them, some of them are confused. You're not sure if they're French or Tahitian, or French enough or Tahitian enough. I can't testify honestly for my own self. I'm half and half. I'm half French, half Tahitian by blood, right? Not even talking about political whatever reasons here. By blood, I'm not even French. Actually, I did my DNA test. I'm actually Scottish. My dad is Scottish, believe it or not. So I'm half French, Scottish, if you want to call it like that, and half Tahitian. but I cannot identify myself as a Scottish person or a French because I don't even know anything about it. I didn't even grow up there. I don't know nothing. So of course I am identifying myself as Maui. And I stay in this line because that's the only thing I know. I want my kids to understand this. Then they're on both sides. They have the American, they have the Tahitian. So I want them to be comfortable in both.
I appreciate that you bring your authentic self in wherever you go. I've always felt that since we met. So just wanted to put that out there that it's not just words. I can attest to having spent time with you that's what I not only see online, but it's what I feel when I'm with you as well. So I think you're doing a great job. That must have been way, way, way before we spent time with the girls, because by the time we, you know, started hanging out with you guys, they're already like amazing, you know, dancing, orero, yeah. Drumming. So that's amazing to hear how it got to that point. I really appreciate it, especially as a parent, you know, coming into that as well with my boys being raised here, but also come from a strong Maui lineage. And I think a lot of people listening also would resonate with that and be proud of what you're saying. It made me feel proud to hear you say that.
It's so important to do this because I recently saw in the Facebook group, remember the Tahitian American? I didn't have time to actually respond, but someone brought the subject of being alpha, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to respond, but then my response will be like paragraphs.
An essay. Yeah.
I can say that. I can talk about this because I am an alpha.
Right, correct.
And I have no issue about it. I have no insecurities about it. Below zero even. Because I cannot, it's hard for me to identify myself to something else that I don't know.
Right.
I just can't, you know? And the thing is, because also my family is like 100% Tahitian. They are, my mom is the only one who stayed with a French guy, right?
Right.
So does that mean like we are discriminated? Like, oh, does that mean that, oh, okay, now I'm not Tahitian anymore? No, it's impossible. You just can't do that. So a lot of people feel insecure with that because they don't know which side they should go. Or I don't have that, actually. I'm always been so confident in my identity that it was never a problem.
When that post had come in to play, there was a couple of us that responded, just you know, bouncing ideas. But I think the biggest difference between what you said and what was shared is that you were raised over there. So I believe that.
So true.
I believe everyone has their own experiences based on how their parents portray it to them. But also what comes into play is which country you're raised in. And then, you know, I just also thought too that I never share this with the kids yet because they're way too young. But one thing that I have always admired about Polynesian genealogy is they're not like in a Western sense, they always look at how much you are. Well, it's your grandma who's, you know, let's just say your grandma's the one who's Chinese. So you're only quarter Chinese, you know, they get real technical. But in the Polynesian perspective, it's opposite, right? If you only have even one tupuna who's Tahitian, you're Tahitian. So it doesn't need 3/4 of you to be Tahitian to be Tahitian. It just takes one tupuna. But I appreciate you, you know, sharing your thoughts too, because I also felt like when these discussions are happening, I try to sit back and think about it from my own, say, Asian American perspective. Also as a father of children who are, you know, half Maohi and half everything that I am, Asian American. But I think that it's you folks who really are the ones who have the first and foremost right to speak on how you identify. And everyone has a right to identify how they want, right?
But absolutely. Everyone is free, you know, to identify themselves however they want. But it's true what you said about their experience. Everybody has their own experience. But let's just say one day I feel insecure and want to identify myself as a Scottish person, like, right? Because I have the proof in my DNA that I'm actually, I have no problem to share my DNA test. I am actually 51% Polynesian.
Okay.
And in my Polynesian, I have a huge part of New Zealand, Maori. And on my Scottish side, I am 49, something like that. It is other half. I'm like literally like half and half. And I could like wake up one day and say, hey, I kind of like I feel insecure because I want to identify myself as a Scottish person too, as you said. So if I'm in that situation, which I don't want, of course, honestly, I'm not interested, but if I am one day, right? I think because I don't know anything about this culture, I don't know nothing. I think then my work is to actually connect, to find that connection and find that balance because and figure out where you can stand. But when I'll and identify myself to the public, I'll say, hey, I'm Tahitian. I was born and raised in Tahiti, but through my DNA, I have Scottish blood. My dad has a whatever connection with the Scottish people. And I am trying to reconnect with that part of my culture. Period. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be, you know. I feel like sometimes people look too much, too far away with that insecurity. It feels like they're looking for that insecurity, you know. So sometimes it's okay, you know. It's okay if you were born here. I told my kids, you're born here. You grew up here in America. Obviously, you know more the American way than the Tahitian way. Yeah, okay. Who cares, right? But I don't want you to forget that you have the Mahi blood in you. So your job is to make sure you find that connection. That's it, period. Go find that connection. I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, that one day they will go and live to Tahiti to really experience what it is to be in the island. If it happens, I'll be happy. If it doesn't, I have no control over my kids. There'll be a time, you know, I won't be able to control that. But you have to be frank with your identity. Don't feel insecure, like not enough, not Tahitian enough. Not. I see a lot of movements out there. I just saw last weekend a movement called Someone Enough, you know? So I think this thing is happening everywhere, not just with the Tahitian community, even other ethnicities. I think this is just, it's globalism, really, because we're so blended everywhere. Now people don't know where, on which side they can identify themselves. I think it's that problem.
It's funny when you say it like that because I can see I've met kids in your girls' age bracket where they'd on both in both countries where they'd think your girls are cool but for opposite reasons, right? Like I met plenty of Tahitian kids and youth. They would love to talk to and get to know and be friends with your girls and my sons because they really are enamored by American pop culture. I go to McDonald's and Papeete, they just run by and they're blasting like Beyonce, they're blasting like different hip hop that they learning about, and they're wearing like all our brands and they're learning English. And yet, when we come here to the States, especially in the Orititi crowd, there's a lot of kids enamored by being Tahitian or learning about Tahiti. And so I think that that's funny that we even as parents have to guard that and like not set the limit, but set the like show our kids what where's the importance here is like keep it real, be honest. This is who you are, this is who your parents are, and this is where you're from. And don't forget it. And then what's going on like around them though, the outer influences, like there's other kids in Tahiti trying to speak English, and then there's kids in America or the United States, that are dancing Orititi and they don't have any they're not even Polynesian, right? So
Yeah.
The irony
Bro,
behind
we're it's a it's a I think it's a human thing, really. We're always longing for something that we don't have in our own, right? It's always like that. Living in Tahiti, I took everything for granted. And I moved here. I was like, wait a minute, I did live there. I did have that. I did have that. Now I don't have it anymore. So I think it's a human, it's in human nature, really, to always go after something that you don't have.
The grass is greener type of thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean. You have touched on bringing your girls to, say, groups where there's no other Tahitians there, which is very common. But you having come across a lot of folks, I know you have a lot of friends, a lot of contacts. So that's kind of one thing that I wanted to ask you about is what are some important things you wish that people who aren't from Tahiti or are not Ma'ohi, what do you wish that they kind of knew more about? And especially in regards to like this like dance community that's led by mostly non-Tahitians, especially, but even in NorCal, it's actually not, almost none of the group leaders are even Polynesian, right?
Yeah.
So that being said, what are some things, important things you wish folks knew regarding that?
Oh my gosh, this is a really, really important question. There's so many things I would love to tell, you know, tell the non-Tahitian people here.
What's your top ones?
There's so many. But if I have to choose one, I will say respect, right? I'll start by the word respect. So let me explain a little bit. Let me break it down. I have, since I moved here in 2006, I have attended many events, right? Oritaiti competitions, Oritaiti shows, I mean, you name it, birthday parties, where the Oritaiti or the Maui culture was involved, right? Or included or showcased. And at all these events, when I moved here, I was so naive, right? I was very naive because I didn't know much, because I only grew up in the island. So I wasn't really aware of what was happening outside. So I came here, I was like, what? There's so many people practicing the Oritaiti. That was like a mind-blowing thing for me, right? Even to find out that it's been like decades and decades of, you know, like people were doing this for a very long time. I was super shocked. So what I realized at that time is at all these events, the majority, as you mentioned, were all like non-Tahitians. There were non-Tahitians, there were Samoans, Tongans, Hawaiians, a lot of Filipinos were involved, you know, in the dance, and then a little bit of Hispanics, very little of white people. I mean, it's just like a whole blend of people, but a lot of Polynesian people, right? Especially on the dance floor. And so they were all practicing our culture through the Oritaiti music, drumming, songs. And I was absolutely and sincerely like proud to see that. To be honest with you, I was in awe. I was amazed. And it really warmed my heart to see all these people doing this. And I know a lot of Tahitians feel the same way as I do, because I'm not the only one who thinks that. To me, what I saw is that all these people, they're contributing to the perpetuation of our culture to the world. That's what they're doing, whether even if they have their own personal benefit in it, right? But to me, that's how I saw. I was like, well, because of them, then all these people can learn about Tahiti, see Tahiti, learn about our dance. To me, I was so grateful, you know, to see that. But it was still hard for me to understand how can they be so passionate about our culture? Like, people invest themselves like financially, physically, mentally, and put so much effort into it. To me, until this day, it's still incredible. Like, I don't have this, and maybe that's why. Like, for example, I'm Tahitian. I'm not passionate about Hawaiian dance, you know? I like it, but I'll probably not kill myself for it. Like, I'm not going to invest like thousands and thousands of dollars and go back and forth to Hawaii. And you know, like, some people are really like hardcore. So this thing, it's still hard for me to understand. Now, that was my experience, you know, with the Oritaiti community here. Now, go back to respect. With my experience, the whole time I have been living here in the U.S., I saw the good and the bad. And there were times where I was very, very frustrated. I was frustrated to see how our culture was carried out to the world. It feels like sometimes our culture was used or was being used for entertainment purposes only, or for people's own benefit. And to me, I thought it was disrespectful. From my understanding here, the way that people practice the Oritaiti here, they practice the Oritaiti as a passion, a sport, or a money maker, right? That's why they do shows and stuff. And that's okay. But what really frustrates me is when our culture is not recognized and acknowledged properly. To me, it is a form of disrespect. For example, the Oritaiti to me and everything else around belongs to Tahiti. It belongs to the Mauhi people. And it seems like people here forget this. And that frustrates me. Like, that frustrates me so much. They're just too eager to go through their own agenda and whatever it is. I have a story here. I went to some events hosted by other Polynesians, Samoan, Tongans, Hawaiians. And of course, when they host the event, they emphasize their own culture. They will talk about in front of their audience, how proud they are to be Samoan or Tongan or Hawaiian or Polynesian in general. And they cheer on each other, choo-hoo, the whole thing, right? Make a whole speech. And then the whole show is freaking oriteiti, right? Which is our Maui culture. And not even once they mention and recognize our culture. And that frustrates me so much. And it's not, when I'm saying this, it's not something that I heard. I actually saw it myself. I was there, you know? So that looked very confusing to me. And honestly, if I was a clueless stranger coming to that show and see this, I would totally think that whatever it's happening on the stage belongs to whoever, whatever culture is represented there. And to me, I hated that. I honestly hate this to the core. I think the minimum people should do here in the oriteiti community, I'm sorry, I'm being honest here. If they choose to showcase our culture, we Maui people or Maui culture, we deserve to have that recognition. We deserve to have that acknowledgement like in front of the audience. I don't care if it's a show or a competition. I just can't take it. Like, let's just say I'm going to host an event. I'm Tahitian and my whole show is Samoan dance, right? I'm going to talk about everybody, about my culture, how proud I am about being a Maui person. And then boom, not even talk about Samoan or anything. And then the whole show continues like this. It's kind of weird, you know? And I still see that until this day and not everywhere. And to be honest with you, I told my husband that I'm choosing to not attend some events because of that, because I don't want to participate into it. And the worst part of it is I hated myself even more for not saying anything. I hated myself for not, like, I didn't stand up for our people. I don't like that. So that's one of the things. I know some people are really good at telling their students, hey, the oriteiti, the Maui culture, we're borrowing. They love to use this word, borrowing the culture. I heard it so many times, even on social media. They love to have those big speech, but then they go in front of an audience. They talk about, yeah, I'm this and that. And then, boom, Tahitian, we don't like nothing. So to me, I feel like the oriteiti or whatever it is, it's been used, you know, just for their own thing. I just don't like that. And when you have a lot of Tahitians coming here, people who are involved in the oriteiti community in Tahiti, oh, they will say the whole big old speech like, oh, we love Tahiti, we're proud, and you know, they will like acknowledge them a lot. But those Tahitians, when they come here, they go home after, but we stay behind and we know what the heck is happening. You know, we know what you guys are saying. So that, I think that's one of the thing that I don't like to see here. There are still people, to me, I feel like it's a disrespectful thing, who are failing to recognize and acknowledge our own culture through dance, through whatever. And that to me, I don't like it.
I almost would then say and be confident even saying that I wonder if they even know how it makes Tahitian people feel, right? That when they go out and do that, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, that, you know, I wasn't in the room with you during those times, but I'm just kind of curious as to whether they even thought of how would this make a Tahitian person living here feel. You know what I mean?
I don't even think they thought, because and this is not even personal, but it becomes personal. It's like, I'm not expecting people to acknowledge me.
Right.
The Maui people, not even like, not, please don't. Actually, I don't even want the attention, not at all.
Right.
But what I don't like is they don't even mention like, hey, the number that we're going to perform right now is, I don't know, something about the Maui people. And I've seen that a couple times already. So that's why I'm like, I don't like this. I don't want to participate into this. I'm sorry. This is just not right.
Right.
So yeah, to me it's that respect. I know there's a lot more I can say, but this is just one thing that I can think right now on top of my head right now.
Of course. No, thanks for sharing that. I can see too when Vaidea is talking to me about this stuff that it's even a little more extreme because, like I said earlier, that in Northern California, more of the groups she's been around aren't even owned by, or put on, these events are not even put on by poly people at all. So that even is even more bizarre, right? Because at least even with the Polynesian stuff, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying that at least there's some familiarity, or maybe there's some kind of similar things that it's like, okay, they learn it from the Asian person who came to their church, or they all went for an exchange, but yeah, I can see that definitely. So I appreciate hearing your perspective, because I know in SoCal most of the groups at least are the owners are Polynesian, but it's the Feyaori, the dancers who are not. So that's also who's being exposed, right? They're not being taught, the students are not being taught the proper ways to engage with or show respect to the Mauhi culture or the people, right?
Yeah, and I know some group leaders are doing their duty. They are actually making sure their dancer understands, but I still feel that sometimes when they are in front of an audience, not all of a sudden they forgot, and they won't talk about our culture. They will talk only about their own culture.
Right.
I know it's a stupid thing, but to me, I feel offended. I really do because I mean, like, wait a minute, your whole show is Oritaiti, and then you didn't even mention once about us. It's kind of weird, you know?
Do you also believe that the education's lacking? For example, I know that with, I'll praise like the Hawaiian community. I know not all halaus, right? But some of the halaus I've been exposed to, I know the kumu will force the students to really study the culture. Like really know about the different akua, the colors, what they mean, what the chants mean. And I don't personally see that that's happening with pupuori, with dance groups here, Tahitian dance groups. I don't feel like that's happening enough. It's really bizarre when we get asked to do, say, a cultural workshop, we share like a little tiny bit of history, surface level stuff you could actually just read online. And everyone's like shocked. I didn't know that. No one told me. Vaidea will go back and say, why didn't anyone tell them? That's like the very basic thing. And I say, I don't know. But then I started reflecting and I was wondering if you thought that education is lacking on that end.
Yeah, actually it is. But I do see a progression though, because from the time since the time I've been here since 2006, I remember the days where Steve and I were helping a lot of groups for competitions. We were writing themes and songs back then, and I see the difference from that the early days I was here and now. Let me explain. People were more clueless back then than now. I see that now there's a lot more interest, you know? But you know what's the sad part? And this is where I can talk about lack of education, is the sad part. And now I can definitely testify because a lot of my students at Polylingual who are learning the Reo Teti, they are actually more motivated to educate themselves, their own leaders. And that's the sad part of it. The lack of the education, yes, it's existent in some groups. Some group leaders don't want to take the time, maybe whatever is their reason, I don't know. But I do have their students in my class
Right.
telling me, hey, I want to learn this. I want to learn why is that. Even some people who don't even know like the basics of Oritaiti,
Right.
like who is Koko Hutahuta? You know, it's a stupid thing, right? That,
Yeah.
like, if you're an Oritaiti dancer, I mean, you should know that, right?
Right.
You don't even need to be great at it to
Yeah.
know this information, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So, what I'm saying is, yes, there is a lack of education sometimes from the leaders, because I've seen students coming to me, but I do see though that a true fact I can't talk in general, but I have seen some group leaders like made the effort to really push themselves into the education.
Right.
And I've seen also some people who really push themselves to learn more, but they did not share with their students. I've seen that too.
Yeah.
Like they will educate like as much as they could, but they won't share with their students. So I'm like, and then the student comes to me and I say, "Hey, can you explain me how what this song is all about?" And I'm like, "Wait a minute, your orientated teacher didn't explain to you this aparima? Because that's his job or her job, right?"
Right.
"No, they didn't explain to me. So can you explain to me?" And here I am explaining the song, right? That's why I said there's that too. And I'm surprised too, because sometimes I'm like, this XYZ orientated teacher, he knows or she knows, right? So why can't she share that, or he shares that? So I think, yes, there is a lack of education, but every group is different. So there's sometimes it's just from the leadership, sometimes it's from the students. It really depends. And I do also see on the opposite side, people who just don't give a sh. They don't give a sh. All they care is the sport. Like, this is where you see like people who are hardcore orientated, where the sport, like the orientated is a sport where they just want to focus on the technicality, on the they want, oh my gosh, they will practice like hardcore, like farapu hours on hours and hours and hours. And even me, because living in Tahiti, we're not hardcore like this, like, so to me it's like, wow, that's insane, right? That's way beyond, that's even overwhelming. So this is where I see like people who just don't give a shit about language. They don't give a shit about anything else. They just want to have that best technique, that best costume, and they just want to win. That's it. And that's very like competitive mindset, right? So there are some people like that.
Well, that progression you're talking about, I gotta kind of, I'll be the first to say it, right? I know you won't say it because I know how you are super humble about this, but I gotta credit you partly for that progression. You and Steve working with groups, that personal touch to his experience and then your upbringing as a combination, then I think would give a group a great chance and a great window to hear from you and also see why it's important, right? Leading by example. And that's why I wanted to also bring up polylingual into our conversation, is because I believe that polylingual has really helped to kind of shape that attitude, right? Because we know who's it's the same people who write the themes, right? There's only a few of us that are
Not a
doing
lot.
that work. But there's not so many of us, like Vaidea and I are not teaching Reo Te Ti to anyone but our sons. So I really admire, truly, and have a lot of respect for the work you have created with Steve. And I was wondering if you'd share with us about polylingual and your vision for it and how you think it's maybe changed the community in some ways.
So, oh my gosh, this is where I can speak with so much pride, to be honest with you, and not just with what I accomplish, really. It's not about what I accomplish at Polylingual, really. It's mostly what my students, our students, as a start, right? It's mostly, I want to give credit to them 100%. The community of Oritete, including dancers, musicians, drummers, whatever, even parents, and even all the travelers to Tahiti, right? To whom I have met, these past years, and have done. So their interest and commitment to educate themselves, immerse themselves in the language, in travel, in culture, to me is beyond words. And that's why I'm saying I want to give them credit. I've done my part. There's so much I need to improve. There's always something to improve. But me, I think I was just the messenger. I was just there to give the resource or the opportunity, right? For them to educate themselves. I think the real credit comes to the person who makes the decision to actually do something about it. Because I can actually put so much content out there and give to whoever I want, like to the whole world if I want to, but that content has no value if nobody is doing anything about it. You know, so to me, Polylingual has provided the opportunity for people to do just that. And I'm very proud of, I call this a movement, the movement of perpetuating the language or the culture beyond borders. And to me, it's only the beginning, and I hope it will amplify over the years. For my part, my personal part, I feel blessed and grateful for all the people I have met and talked to, engage with, exchange ideas, and all the people who helped me and supported as well. They have taught me so much, not only as a human being, but also as a Maui person. It's funny to say that, as a Maui person, as an entrepreneur, and as a teacher. It has been a really like crazy journey, and I'm not planning to stop anytime soon, to be honest with you. I will continue in this for as long as I can do, probably until I won't be able to do anything like physically and mentally. This is something that I'll die with. I have another business, right? I have my travel agency. I promote the islands of Tahiti. I love this job, yes. If I have to choose, I will quit this job like right now if I have to. I'm keeping this job because I have bills to pay too, like everybody. But I will quit this job like any day, right? No problem. But Polylingual, I'll never quit because I know this job is just, I'm basically participating into a work that can make a huge impact in the community for years to come. I think I'm just at the beginning of it, you know? So, and I hope that participate in the movement of perpetuating the language or the culture, it takes a lot of people to do that. And me right now, I'm by myself. I have my family, I have Steve. I had people who helped me, Reo teachers and professors, mentors from Tahiti, who helped me along the way. But I'm really literally running the show by myself. I do all social media by myself. I do all videos by myself, video editing, creating the content, writing a curriculum, doing all the exercise, meeting with the students. I really like run the show. And I'm not saying this to my point here is to say that to participate in the movement of perpetuating the language or the culture, it shouldn't be a one-person job. You know, we need more people like you guys, like you and Vedia. I believe in the participation of a group effort. You know, we need more people in the game if we really want to make a huge impact. Right now with Polylingual, I am proud of the impact that is happening, but this is not enough. This is very small to me. I'm thinking bigger than this. Because I'm alone here. So, of course, there's so much I can do as a human being, but it's not enough. But I know it did impact a lot of people. I see on social media a lot of times, especially these past couple of years, I see a lot of people posting in Tahitian, you know, even going to Oritete competitions, I hear people say, Ahue, you know what? Who brought the Ahue? Hello, I did. I'm sorry. I know it's a little bit selfish here, but it's because I made a stupid video and telling people, hey, when you go to competition, this is the kind of words that you can say. Maybe they didn't learn from me. I don't know. But I know I did this part. I did share that with the students. But hearing them saying this, I was like, this is amazing. It's happening, right? It's really happening. People are finally using Tahitian words instead of using Samoan and Tongan. And no offense to their language. This is an Oritete competition. You know, we got to stay in the context. So I do know that there was a huge impact. You know, I saw the progression. I saw the interest. I saw the change. So I'm doing my best here. And I hope that everything I do truly helps people. There's always room for improvement. That's for sure. But I do also know that doing this by myself is not enough. We need more people. I know we always think about, oh, if there's other people doing workshops about culture, workshops about Himine, workshops about Reo, it's competition. I don't see it like that. I see it, the more, the better. We need to have more people doing this because we need to make a bigger impact. So I don't want to be the only one in the game. And I hope with what I'm sharing here right now, it's going to inspire other people to do this. If there's other people doing Reo classes like me here, the more the merrier, right? On the business perspective, of course, I'm going to fight. I am an entrepreneur. I'm going to fight to have the most business out of it. But that's not my main mission. I'm not here to make money. I already have a job to make money. It's the travel business. I am doing this because everything we're doing has a cost. Everything we do at Polylingo has a cost. It's not free. I got a lot of time like criticized for the things I was doing. I should teach the language for free. You know, I shouldn't charge people. I shouldn't, because this kind of education has to be free and accessible to everyone. I disagree 100% with this because
I
everything
disagree.
I do, it ain't free,
Yeah.
right? Because who's gonna pay, right?
It's your
Who's gonna
time.
pay? Yeah, and the time and also even everything, the platform cost, there's just a lot going on. So obviously people who make those comments are ignorant. So yeah, there's just a lot of that. I also got discriminated because of the color of my skin. I'm too light to teach Reo Tahiti.
That
I
is.
got criticized a lot on TikTok, actually. I had haters on TikTok saying that I remember I actually took a screenshot of it. Some people call me colonizers.
The hell? Oh my
I
goodness.
say, oh, here goes those colonizers going and teach Reo Tahiti online.
Jeez.
I thought that was hilarious. But anyways, so this is why I say that their journey is freaking crazy. It's
Yeah,
freaking crazy.
absolutely.
I hope my story and my experience will inspire others to do the same or even better than I
Right,
did.
right.
I hope so because it should. It should. We shouldn't look at, oh, I want to be the only one doing this. No,
No, yeah, no.
absolutely not. That's how humble I'm thinking it should be. Like, this is my way of thinking. So and I hope it's gonna encourage other people.
Well, we have the same goal as you, which is to make sure that folks have access to learn. As long as Vaida is living here in the US, and as long as I have time to help her out with projects, and we're kind of along the same lines of what you shared about what you guys are doing and what you think is important. I absolutely agree with that, and you know that, but that's why we make such good friends with you guys, because we have those long discussions about that. That being said, though, so you already know, like, we're on board with you, but I want to ask you, how can other Tahitian families, support your efforts to preserve not just the language, but really what you're doing? Can we have more of a push to have more of us, like, appearing in some of your promotion or your videos? Or is it small things like sharing or spreading it around or making referrals? Like, what do you think are some of the best ways we can help as the other Tahitian American families in our network?
So, oh my gosh, I love this question because, oh my goodness, I definitely need so much help. I will take any help, any support that, presents to me. First, I'll say two things. First, I'll say the best way to support this movement. I'll talk still again about this movement of perpetuating the language and the culture beyond borders. The first one is by actively speaking the language, really. If we're talking about the Reo Tahiti, it's so important that us Tahitian, we actually practice this. We have to. I personally and honestly do struggle sometimes with languages, believe it or not, even though I'm teaching Reo Tahiti. And I think it's because I am trilingual. I speak three languages at home on a daily basis. Sometimes it's hard to go back and forth. And because of that, sometimes I do forget how to speak. Like, for example, I can be speaking full on Tahitian and English like for a long time. And then when I come back to French, I can't speak French anymore. You know, so I have those. I know I met a lot of polyglot before, so they struggle with that too. So I'm not the only one. So I think it's a real thing. Beside sharing this, is that I think it is important for us Tahitian American to actively speak Reo Tahiti because, guys, this is treasure. This is what makes us different from the world. Why do we want to be like everybody else speaking French? You know, why do we want that? There's so many millions of people who are doing this. I know it's, I'm not against French language. I speak French to my girls all the time too. It's useful. But I think we should put a lot more effort into the Reo-Tahiti. So I think I would love the Tahitian American families to be more involved in that. And then the second thing, if they are motivated or they hear the call of supporting and helping me with this movement more practically, I will be happy with open arms to welcome them. Like I said, I'm repeating myself again. I'm currently doing this alone. My husband, my kids are helping me, but they are helping me with whatever they can help with, you know, because Steve has a job too. The girls are at school. But what I really need is I need like people who can speak Tahitian and speak English. That'll be amazing. I'm in need of Reo-Tahiti, I'll say speakers or even teachers to actually build a bigger community. Me by myself, I have a hard time, for example, to meet up with my students all the time. And so I would love to have, and I want to emphasize the Tahitian American people, because let me tell you, I reach out to a lot of people in Tahiti who can teach Reo-Tahiti, but the majority of them cannot speak English. And it's not just speaking English, it's also teaching Reo-Tahiti in English. So this is a big, big difference. I have worked with some professors at the university of French Polynesia, and they are taught to teach Reo-Tahiti in French, right? So there's a lot of terms that even me, I had to learn when I started this whole thing. I had to learn. So not everybody has that skill. So teaching Reo-Tahiti in a different language like English takes practice, it takes training for that. I went through that training myself, and I'm still training right now with all the experiences that I have with students. So why I would love to have Tahitian American is because they understand both worlds. It's good for them to know their audience, the Americans, and it's good for them to also know how to speak the language. So that way it's easy to teach that, to relate to that. Oh, for example, in American English, we have a lot of expressions that we use here. And, you know, with languages, sometimes we can't translate things very well, you know, because we're completely like two different cultures. So you need, as a Tahitian American, because you understand the difference, you're able to relate things together, right? It takes skills to do that. And also, I would love if there's anybody, and I'm so called right now, it's an invitation, who actually has some kind of like Reo-Tahiti, you know, speaking skills, and if they're interested to the community of Reo-Tahiti speakers from all over the world, that would be amazing. I'll take whatever, whoever wants to help. So that's my wish. And that's, I think, how people can help me in this effort that I'm doing to preserve the language.
So that comes to our very final question, right? As we're trying to bridge together the diasporas of Tahitian American people in different states, what do you think it's best for us to do to build that solid community? Because we've been all working on it since that little group became such a big group. You're such a huge part of it because you literally hosted the last meetup that we had. So there's families from Florida that came, families from Oahu, families from, I think it was Arizona, Nevada, San, you know, as not so close, but, you know, San Francisco, San Diego. So that being said, you know, is it more tamaras or is it like online meetups, or, you know, what are some suggestions that you have for our building, our small community that we've been building and working on together?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, I really, since the first time we met, you know, we gather together as Tahitian American families, I thought that was awesome, you know. And the first thing I told Steve after that first party we had, we went home. In the car, I told him, oh, man, I wish those things were there when I just moved. because when I moved here in 2006, I was so alone. Oh my goodness, I was so alone, so depressed. I wish, you know, that community was there at that time. But you know what? I tough it by myself. So I made it through. I made it through. But anyways, I was thankful for this event. So I want to encourage Tahitian American families, right, to stay connected with their culture. That's the first thing, right? It is important. It's so important. Even if you live far away from the Finwa, and I know some of our Tahitian American families, they haven't returned to Tahiti for years. But I think keeping that connection is crucial. If you can't go back physically, but there's a lot, you know, I already gave so many examples earlier. There's so many other ways that you can stay connected. To me, if you don't, then you become a Hotu Peinu. I love to use this analogy. A Hotu Peinu, the Hotu is actually a fruit, right? It's not edible. But I remember even back in the time in my childhood when we used to go to Tahiti, when my uncles will go spearfishing, they will use actually the Hotu and put, like, that's where they actually put the line of fish that they just caught, you know? And I think it's actually a floaty, you know, it stays above the water. But it's so light that it actually drifts away easily with the current and whatever. So our ancestors, they use this fruit as an example to say that when you lose your identity, when you don't know who you are and where you're from, you become a Hotu Peinu. Peinu means to drift. So a Hotu Peinu is somebody, now we can say, is somebody who actually is not sure where, he's not confident with his identity. He's not sure who he is, where he comes from, and all that stuff. So I want to encourage the Tahitian American families to actually stay connected with their culture so they don't become a Hotu Peinu.
I learned something new from you right now. I like that.
Yeah, the Hotu Peinu. So yeah, this is why I actually learned this from my uncle when I was a kid. But did I care at that time? Absolutely not. But now it does make sense.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, a Hotu Peinu, that this is what this is a perfect message for Tahitian American families. I cannot teach that. I cannot share this concept to foreigners who are learning the Reo Teti about our culture, because it doesn't really concern them. It concerns the people who actually do have an identity that they are confused about. You know, they lost.
Right.
So yeah, that's my biggest message to the Tahitian American families. But the ways we can use to actually, you know, solidify or build our community as Tahitian American families, to me, I see three things. It's super simple. The first one, we have to continue celebrate our culture.
Okay.
We have to organize our events. We have to continue doing this. I know there's work involved, but I think it's a must, because if we don't do that, then what's the point? Like, why, like, a community, they celebrate together, whatever community you're part of. And Tahitians community, oh my goodness, that's what we're known for. Right. We're known to gather. We're known to party. We're known to celebrate, you know? We're known to celebrate our traditions, our customs. That's what we're known for. So I think that's the first one our community should do, is to continue celebrating our culture together, right? Second thing, provide support. Yes, I mean here by helping each other. If, for example, like I say, I'm inviting our Tahitian American family, hey, if any one of you guys are interested to come along with me to share the Reo Teti with my students, oh my gosh, you're more than welcome. So that's providing support. If you guys on your other side, Ryan, Veria, if you need help in any kind, we'll come and support you.
Of course.
You know, so providing support is, that's just an example. Not everybody can do this, but that's an example. Or providing resources or, you know, whatever the community needs. So we have to help each other. And then the last one is consistency. And with whatever we do, and that's probably the hardest one, is to, to actually have consistent connections, you know.
Yeah.
Great space for people to connect, to share stories or build relationships. I think the Facebook group is great because of the digital space, virtual space, we're able to reach out to people from every corner of the world, I'll say, right? I know we're focused on the United States, which is great, and that's amazing, but we don't live close to each other, right?
No. Yep.
So I think it's awesome. I think the Facebook group is great. We have to keep on nurturing that page, but it has to be a group effort. It has to be a group effort, not only the same one. Like for example, the party that I hosted last time, Steve and I, it happened that we were free at that time, so that's why we did it.
Of
But we're
course.
not gonna be free every time, you know?
Yeah.
We won't be free every time. Like it should be. I mean, if I have all the time in the world, I will absolutely do it all the time. I don't mind. I actually like to organize events, and that's my thing. Steve and I, we always host parties at our house,
Right.
so I don't mind doing it again, right? But I think it's the time too. The time, everybody has their own agenda. So I think as a community, we could make it as a group effort. Like maybe one day somebody else will host or something like that. To me, if we want to maintain that community and if we want to grow that community, that's the biggest thing. We have to do things on a consistent basis. Otherwise, it's not going to be successful. It will die out. Because with my community of Rio Tete students, at some point I was actually absent. I wasn't doing as many workshops anymore because that was like when the post-pandemic, when the pandemic was over
Right.
and I started the travel agency again. And I was completely overwhelmed because when I started Polylingo, I was even working in the travel business because of the pandemic. By the way, everyone, I launched Polylingo during the pandemic. I had all the time in the world at that time, but then when the travel business came, you know, back to the surface, I was like doing two jobs at the same time. It was hectic. It
Yeah.
was crazy. So I had to put Polylingo on the side for a little bit so I can get this going. I saw the community actually die a little bit. I saw the people leaving. They were not interested anymore because I wasn't showing up for them. I know for a fact that if we don't do things on a consistent basis, it's hard to grow, I'll say. It's hard to grow. So I mean, yeah, those are kind of like the three things I want to say. Celebrate the culture, provide support, and the last one is keep things consistent. But it has to be a group effort. It shouldn't like fall on one person's shoulder. Everybody has their own lives and you know they have their own things to do. So I even have another idea. The person who posted the thing about the Afa people, I don't know her personally, but you know, like she brought the idea of not, I'm not talking about specifically about the subject or the topic, is the idea of like bringing a conversation right there in the group. To me, it's amazing. And it should, like, these are things that we should talk about it, right? We should talk about it as a community. But doing this as a post, to me personally, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to write a whole essay just to respond to this. But I told Sid, man, I wish we have like a Zoom thing where we can have conversation instead of like typing, because I think for this kind of topic, you need more room to or more time to explain yourself or share. Anyways, those are just ideas. But like I said, it shouldn't fall on one person. Maybe. If we can delegate is the best way to do, you know, to build a community. Not just you guys. It's a
Well,
lot.
we definitely, we don't want it to just be us. We also don't want to like voluntold people. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I need you to do this, and it's like they have stuff going on. But I've been waiting also for other people to help us out, and you guys have been such a great help. I just want to thank you guys for hosting our parties, or just also posting and sharing some things in there. The Sweaters, like I said, they hosted us, what, 6 months ago now. And then, of course, like Ty, Heyani, and Julie, they're also like co-admins, so it's really helpful. Vaidea is not on Facebook anymore. To all the people who are looking for her, her profile's gone. So just that's one less person that's on there, of course, but she still checks things through me, so
Oh, that's what I wish I can do, to be honest.
yeah.
Oh, I hate social media. I hate social media, but I like it at the same time.
Right, love and hate.
I hate for personal stuff, to be honest with you. But I do like it for business because it really helps, you know, connecting, you know, with other people,
Course.
with your students, with, you know, whatever it's happening in the world. And that's a good thing. But for personal, I don't even feel I don't see the benefit, really, honestly. And I'm not that kind of person who will share to everybody, hey, this is what I ate last night.
Right, right.
I'm old school. I like to nurture what I have in reality here in my home more than anything. I told Steve, I'm not going to take a picture of both of us like, oh, we're in love. Are we really in love? You know, that's what I want to know. You know, now I'm not going to show to people like, hey, look at us. We're so in love. Yeah. What really matters is what's happening at home. But I do like social media for business and community. Really, it really does kind of like what Veria did. Did she do that because of that? Or
she did it because she feels the same way as you. She didn't need to put everything out there. I personally share stuff, you know, of the boys and what's going on at this, especially for her family to see. But
I do, but yeah. not like I don't vlog my life. You know?
Right. Of course.
No, me too. Because like I do have a messenger groups. Sometimes, you know, I share even on WhatsApp. If I want to share things with my family, I share directly with them. Why do I want to share with strangers and whatever? But sometimes I do, because a lot of people we have met over the years, I ask like, hey, how are you guys doing? How's your kids? Or so sometimes once in a while I'll share. It's really intentional. I hope that whatever I share today will be inspiring other people, maybe motivate them to take actions with whatever they have a plan in their life, whatever their goals are. That's my wish. My last word, again, I know I'm repeating myself, but I'm believing in this so much, but I do really want our Tahitian American families to find that confidence in their identity. This is such a huge thing, you know. I really want them to be proud of this, not just be proud in their head, but even proud physically, the things they do in their activities, you know. There's one thing I wanted to say is that leaving Tahiti made me more Tahitian. It's a true thing. I had to be far from my family to realize how fortunate we are, you know, as Tahitian people. We're so fortunate. The things that our ancestor did, the heritage that we carry, it's just beyond words. So I love my culture so much. That's why I want to make sure that people realize this, because it's such a big thing, you know? So that's my biggest thing. I want to encourage Asian American families to feel that, to find that confidence.
Thank you, Moina. Perfect way to end it. Nana.
Nana!